I'm Bonnie Johnson, bringing you the colors of jazz and a celebration of Leadbelly, a reimagined album by drummer Adam Nussbaum. Gonna have a chance to talk with the drummer about this project. I thought I'd share a little bit about Leadbelly. Many years ago, I discovered the recordings of Alan Lomax and his son as they ventured out into the world to capture folk music. And it is said that Alan Lomax discovered Leadbelly. Though Leadbelly had his music going on, Lomax had a great influence in bringing him into mainstream. Interesting recordings with Leadbelly talking about the blues. And then we'll get into Adam Nussbaum's project where he reimagines the tunes. On 90.5 WICN, hey, I'm Bonnie Johnson. I'm bringing you the colors of jazz. I'm bringing you the colors of Adam Nussbaum's jazz. He's the drummer, you know, that jazz drummer, been doing his thing, just released a second tribute album to Leadbelly, the 12-string guitarist, folklorist, musician, and we're going to celebrate his life and legacy and celebrate this new release. I have Adam with me. Hey, Adam.
How are you, Bonnie?
I'm doing great. I'm excited to talk to you today with your project and release party next Saturday night on the 20th.
On Leadbelly's birthday in Boston, coincidentally. That's his birthday.
Yeah. You know, I love that. Huddy William Leadbetter, born January 20th, 1888. He lived to the age of 61, so he died way too soon. I just played Relax Your Mind. And on this MLK Day weekend, I just thought it'd be great to talk to you about the life and legacy of Leadbelly and the music and your own journey into this music we call jazz. So, where to begin? I think there's two iterations of this project.
Yeah, you played some of the second one, and the first one we did in 2017. And what I did was, I've been involved with so many wonderful musicians, and I've been fortunate to play with so many of my mentors and heroes. And when it was time for me to try to do something under my own name, I was thinking, what relates to my history? And the very first records that intrigued me as a little boy were records that I found in my parents' record collection. Mm-hmm. And what attracts you to records when you're a child or initially is the covers.
Uh-huh.
So I'm looking at these records, and these are 10-inch 33s. These were Folkways records that my parents had, and they had a very diverse record collection. And these records intrigued me because on one of them was a very black man wearing overalls and a bandana. And on the other one, it was the same gentleman wearing a beautiful gray suit with a big 12-string guitar. So it was kind of like I was getting the country and the city. And I put these records on, and I just loved listening to them. And there was all those songs, you know, Old Riley, Green Corn, Black Girl. And I decided, well, let me go back to something that originally inspired me as a youngster. And I've been hearing so much music recently that kind of sounds like science projects, you know. And this was just basic, down-home, simple material that I found intriguing. And I said, this will be a good springboard to explore the whole aspects of improvising and having a good time. You know, Leadbelly played a 12-string guitar, and I don't know anybody that really plays a 12-string. So I said, well, let me get two great 6-string players. That way we get 12. And I need somebody that can do like a nice lead voice. And that was why I selected Ohad Talmore to play tenor saxophone.
Okay.
And he helped to instigate this project because he was saying, man, you should be doing something, you know. And I was thinking, well, if I do something, it has to relate to something. So there you go.
There you go.
It's kind of a full circle event.
Well, I did want to take back. I opened with Relax Your Mind, but just before you came on, I played When I Was a Cowboy. And I love the juxtaposition of the different characters portrayed on those album covers you described. I actually caught a Zoom where you were being interviewed. It was fun because you were pulling out albums album covers, sharing artwork on the wall. You know, it's kind of cool to have that Zoom aspect of life, right? To take us back. But a couple of things that came up was this fact that you have the two guitarists and just the way they harmonize together, right? You have one going up, one going down, and then they were making up for those 12 strings, yeah?
Yeah, well, you know, the thing that I think is most important with really great musicians is they not only know how to play well, but the guys that play best know how to listen best.
Mm-hmm.
And the only instruction I gave to them, I said, listen, I trust both you guys. So the only instruction is don't be doing the same thing at the same time. And if one goes up, the other goes down. And these gentlemen really know how to complement each other very well. And I'm very grateful for their presence. And what happened was on the first recording, I picked out all the material and gave basic ideas about, well, let's try this tune like this. Let's try this tune like that. And so then after we did the first recording, which was just called the Lead Belly Project, for the second one, I said, okay, Cass, you got an idea about what's going on here. Why don't you pick out some material that you would like to do from the Lead Belly songbook? So that's what a lot of that material is on the Reimagined project.
Mm-hmm. And I was going to say, I love that. I love the influence of the music that you are exposed to, and then the fact that you opened it up for the musicians to bring their imagination to what y'all might play. As for me and Lead Belly, I want to share with the listeners, I'm talking to Adam Nussbaum. He is drummer, and we're talking about his newest release and project, Lead Belly Reimagined, celebrating the blues folk singer and guitarist. And, you know, you mentioned the simplicity of the music, and what I really love about Lead Belly are some of the clapping songs, and in black culture, that's a big thing, you know, these little hand games. And I remember doing a lot of that hand clap and rhyming, and really the influence of Lead Belly on that, you know, sort of mainstream is kind of fun, you know, the children's songs, the work songs, of course, you know, hearkening back to your childhood, it's really pretty special.
Yeah, I mean, I was fortunate that my parents had a very diverse record collection. You know, they had a lot of classical music. They had folk. They had blues. They had flamenco. They had Japanese music. They had Cuban music. They virtually had everything. So growing up, I had an exposure to all kinds of music in my house, besides everything that was on the radio. You know, I remember profoundly when the Beatles were on Ed Sullivan, and I saw them. I was 8 years old. Then a few months later, I saw Dizzy Gillespie, and that was a profound event.
And we got to talk about that. I'm going to bring you back to that story, and I want to bring the listeners back to the music, and then I want to talk to you specifically about that encounter with Dizzy Gillespie.
Absolutely.
You know, the thing about Lead Belly, he lived a storied life, right? And we know he was locked up for a time, incarcerated.
On numerous occasions, incarcerated.
And there's a song that really goes with his release and his relationship with ethnomusicologist and historian Alan Lomax. So I thought I would play Governor Pat Neff.
That's a good call.
Yeah, so give us a little lead into your reasoning for selecting that tune on this album.
Well, this was picked out by Nate and Steve, who were the two guitar players, Nate Radley and Steve Cardenas.
Mm-hmm.
Governor Pat Neff heard Lead Belly when he was incarcerated down in Texas. And he was so taken by his abilities that he goes, we can't have this man in jail. You know, he's got too much to offer. So Pat Neff pardoned Lead Belly. Years and years later, John Kennedy pardoned Hampton Hawes, the great pianist. So power of music can set you free.
Totally. It's so true.
In more ways than one.
In more ways than one. And as we celebrate Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s life, I want to share that quote from King where he wrote in his opening address to the 1964, that year again, remember that year, 1964. Adam and I are going to talk about this year in particular. In 1964 at the Berlin Jazz Festival, Dr. Martin Luther King said, "Jazz speaks for life." It's one of few quotes where he's speaking on jazz, and I love to share that with the listeners. So, Adam, I'm going to play Governor Pat Neff. If you can hold the line, we'll come right back.
Yeah,
we're going to talk. We got plenty for you here on 90.5 WICN. Thanks again for joining me. I'm Bonnie Johnson. I'm bringing you the colors of jazz. Hi, Adam.
Hey.
Still there.
Still here.
You have a sense of humor that I love. You and I have talked just very briefly outside of this conversation, and I giggle every time you speak up. I love your energy. It's really great. So thank you.
Well, we got to try to keep it light and stay on the sunny side of the street with all the crazy going on in this world right now.
Isn't it true? It's so true. That being said, you talked and shared about the influence of your parents' music collection, and then you touched on meeting Dizzy Gillespie. And I have heard this story, but I wanted to share with the listeners a little bit more about how it is you encountered Dizzy Gillespie, especially on this Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. weekend. It is so apropos, your story that you share.
Okay. I grew up in Norwalk, Connecticut, and my parents heard about a benefit concert that was being held for the NAACP at Leonard Bernstein's summer home in Fairfield, Connecticut.
Wow. Wow.
So the way that his yard was, he had a very open space, and it was kind of on a hill aiming down towards his home where there was a large patio on the ground level. And there was bands set up there. And that day, I remember only my interchange with Dizzy, because here I am, a little eight-year-old, and of course I'm fascinated by the drums. So I'm watching the drummer, and then Dizzy kind of catches my eye, and I see him. And, I'm 8 years old. I'd never seen anybody's cheeks puff out like his did.
Right.
I never saw anybody that had a trumpet like Dizzy had, with the upward-turned bell. And then Dizzy sees me, and he starts clowning around with me. And when the other guys in the band were playing, he's like messing around with me. And I'm thinking to myself, this is the coolest guy. I don't remember anything about the music. I just remember this is such a cool. From that, I don't remember the music that day, but I have the program. And that day, Dizzy was there. Billy Taylor was there. Wes Montgomery, Buck Clayton,
wow.
Morgana King, Milt Hinton. It was just incredible to have that much music, and everybody was there, and this was a benefit for the NAACP. And this was
in 1964,
I think it was July,
right?
Of 1964. Somewhere I have the newspaper clipping, because my father was there doing some sketches, and somewhere I have these. He was a wonderful graphic artist, and so in this newspaper article, it had a picture of him sketching, and then it had pictures of other local luminaries and things like that. But to kind of go full circle, years later, I kind of got to know Dizzy being on the scene. I worked opposite him quite a few times. And then I ended up subbing for the great drummer Mel Lewis with the American Jazz Orchestra. And we were doing a concert down at Cooper Union, playing Dizzy's big band music. And that concert ended up having, a grade A, top class New York band, the best people. John Faddis was in the band. Milt Jackson was there. Al McKibben, John Lewis. I know I'm forgetting people.
Uh-huh.
But Dizzy showed up with Percy Heath.
Wow.
And while we were playing, they came out and said, let's play it to them. And I got to play Confirmation with virtually the MJQ and Dizzy. And I couldn't believe this was happening to me. I was kind of, you know, just, I was pinching myself. I couldn't believe it. And for me, the sweetest thing was my dad was at the gig. So it was kind of like a full circle thing, me being blessed by Dizzy when I was 8. And then years later, getting to play with him, which was such a treat. And he was just a wonderful human being. He played great, but he had such an exuberant personality, and he was always fun. A wonderful musician and a wonderful human being.
And such a great influence. And I love that full circle moment, and that now, you know, you've played with so many artists and never in your imagination, right?
I pinch myself on numerous occasions going, wow, I'm so grateful for these experiences. It's wonderful. Like I say, I may not be rich in my pocket, but I'm very rich in my soul, being able to have contact with these people. And there's nothing greater than to get to play with your heroes.
Yeah.
That's such a wonderful feeling. And, you know, helps you get through those days when you feel a little down and blue. And you can say, well, I got to do this, I got to do that, so something must be happening.
And, well, we're talking to Adam Nussbaum here on 90.5 WICM. Once again, I'm Bonnie Johnson, bringing you the colors of jazz. And the list of artists that you've played with is pretty amazing. John Abercrombie, Dave Liebman, John Scofield, some of them your peers, James Moody. I mean, I'm just running, Chris Potter, Mike Stern, the list, Eddie Gomez, Ron Carter, Steve Swallow, who you've played with extensively.
You know, he's one of my heroes and one of my mentors. You know, this is, there's a lot of people where I have to say, know them, know me.
Okay.
You know, they helped to shape me. And I was fortunate at a young age to get to play with some people that just had more experience than me. And just in reality, there's nothing like direct contact. You know, being on the bandstand with great musicians helps up your game. You know, as great as the internet is and YouTube and all this stuff, there's nothing like being in the room and feeling it. And there's no substitute for that. I just think this is something that, you know, a lot of the younger generation, they need to get out and experience live music. Because it can change your life.
So true. That's what I was going to say, intergenerational aspect of jazz and the legacy of the artists, like the continuity and the passing of the torch. I was going to bring a couple of quotes to you, but I literally captured quotes from you that really stood out for me and wanted to share with the listeners just to see if you go a little bit deeper. One, this notion of spirits are eternal, you know, and that they're always with us, right? Our ancestors and those who came before us, always with us. And
absolutely,
as we think about MLK Day and his legacy, just wonder if you comment a little further on that thought.
Well, my feeling is we are one race. We are the human race. And we're all God's children. And, you know, everybody, I just pray that people can get along and just try to show some kindness and compassion. And one of the beautiful things about the music is it cuts through all the BS and the nonsense. And music is a universal language, and it can affect people within their body and in their soul. And, you know, music has got to be a combination of things from the waist down and the neck up and find somewhere in between. Because, you know, you got to be able to dance. You got to be able to snap your fingers. And you want to be able to feel something from music. You know, the whole thing is bringing forth emotion and feelings. And that's one of the great things about the great musicians. They know how to touch you and something that really can get within you and, you know, hopefully take you to another place and in these times, it's nice to have that option to leave what's happening right now.
That's right. And I think that's our mantra here at 90.5 WICN. You know, our mantra is we're here for you, right? And it is. It's true. The music, the music, the music. I love the quote, once again, from you. When you come to the bandstand, you bring your whole life to that moment. And I also love the idea, which I need to practice on, is the listening, right? And so that, too, yeah, is so profound, I think.
You know, these days with all the schools and all the codified information that's out there, I mean, there's more available to people that want to study music now than ever as far as codified information.
Mm-hmm.
But if you want to play music with other people, you can't practice that by yourself. You can work on skills as far as getting your own abilities together as far as playing your instrument. But you have to be on the bandstand playing with other people in real time. And you have to be able to just get your ear fast. How fast can you hear? How well you can react and respond to the situation at hand? I mean, I think one of the reasons I've been fortunate enough to work is I'm never thinking about me when I have to play music. I'm trying to help everyone else sound good. That's why I'm working. My job is helping them sound good.
Yeah.
If I'm helping them do that and they feel good with what I'm doing, then that's what's important to me. And you have to listen to everybody, figure out what it is that's going to help them get to what they want to do.
Mm.
And the main thing is you have to gain the trust of the other musicians on the bandstand.
Sounds like a formula for peace.
Well, if only the world could be like that. You know, the bandstand is a sacred place.
Mm.
I remember Joe Henderson saying, this is the altar up here. So
okay,
we have to leave all our cares and woes. And when you get on the bandstand, that's a holy place.
Oh, I love it. Well, I would love to play one more tune and then just close up, wrap up our talk. There are some women who Lead Belly refers to. Goodnight Irene. And,
oh, that's a famous one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's sort
there
of like
well known.
There was also
the one that he wrote when Princess Elizabeth was a princess before she was a queen, you know,
before she was coronated,
she
right?
Coronation.
Mm-hmm.
Princess Elizabeth was a nice, pretty little song that he wrote.
Well, let's listen to that. I would like to play. What I'd like to do, if you have the time, I'd like to first play Lead Belly's version, and then I'd like to play yours and then bring you back. It's top of the hour.
Great.
And yeah, we have time. We'll just and give the folks a chance to hear how it was reimagined and then hear Lead Belly himself on Princess Elizabeth. See, as though we said goodbye to her in 2023. I think that'd be a great way to go out of this talk. Okay, so hold the line once again. Here on 90.
You're the fun director.
All right. We are having fun. I hope you are too. Amen. Out there on 90.5 WICN. I'm talking to Adam Nussbaum. He's a drummer, got a long history in the music, and as a leader, very humble man here speaking with me. I'm going to play Princess Elizabeth from Adam Nussbaum, and then I'm going to play Princess Elizabeth from Lead Belly as we celebrate the folk guitarist and singer trailblazer Huddy William Ledbetter, who'll be celebrating his birthday on January 20th, and the record release will be celebrated at Scholars as well on the very same day. Let's skip into the music. It's 2:56. Wondering what color is influencing your day. Adam, thank you for joining us today on The Colors of Jazz.
I appreciate you having me. Thank you.
It's been a blast, and we've been talking offline, and you mentioned Joe Sample, and I always harken back to the day he walked into this studio to sit in with me some maybe 12 years ago. Pretty amazing. A late, great pianist. Yeah. And you said you performed and toured with him and Randy Crawford?
Yeah. I played with Joe for several years. We had some very good times. He was a very good man. I enjoyed his company and making music with him. He was a wonderful composer and fantastic musician.
Yeah. You know? He really was a great spirit. So I definitely I said, hey, he's in the room then. Like we said, those spirits live on. There's a question I like to ask all my guests because you're on The Colors of Jazz. What color is influencing your day? Are you feeling a certain color today, or do you have a favorite color you might like to share with the listeners?
Well, I kind of like the color purple, kind of the combination of red and blue. We know what red and blue mean politically, so I just want people to, like, get together here.
Oh, I love that.
This is what's got to happen. I mean, I'm just concerned about what it's going to be for the youngsters and what kind of world is going to be there for them.
Yeah, crazy time.
Positive.
Mm-hmm. And then
it's a little difficult.
It is a little difficult. Well, again, I'm talking to Adam Nussbaum, the drummer. I wondered how you got into drumming. I mean, you said you loved it as a child. Your parents brought you a drum set. You got lessons at school.
What happened was, I have an older cousin, and if he's listening, hey, Peter, how are you? I happened to go visit him. He's 9 years older than me. I must have visited him when I was about 5. And he was 14. And I spent a weekend with my aunt and uncle and him, and he had a drum set. And I watched him play, and it was basically monkey see, monkey do. He put on a stack of 45s, and he was playing with them. Then I watched him do it, and I just kind of did it. And I didn't study drums when I was a youngster. From the time I was 7 till about 12, I studied classical piano. But I was always, you know, playing on pots and pans and playing on pillows. And I got drums when I was 13.
Okay.
But when I got the drums, I already was playing pretty well. And it used to piss off my friends that had drum sets already, because I'd go over to their house and play, and they were taking drum lessons. But I was not taking drum lessons. I basically came to the drums for music. I didn't come to music from the drums.
Okay.
And I think that's affected my whole approach. Because I'm trying to be a good... First, I'm trying to be a decent human being. Then I'm trying to be a good husband, decent father, and a good musician who plays the drums.
Okay. I love it. In that
I'm
order.
I'm not sure it works all the time, but I'm doing what I can.
Well, first I want to give a shout out to Therese D'Amuzio, who turned me on to your upcoming concert. You know, she sort of reached out.
Yes, we love her. She's a doll.
We love her, too. She played here last year with what I dubbed the Colors of Jazz All-Stars on our Women's History. I had a Women's History project, and she came in.
Wait.
And did her improv drumming, and so, you know, she really filled me in on y'all's relationship. But one album I wanted to mention, and another close tie, is the album Renaissance and Albert Daly. And the thing is, Charlie Persip, a dear friend of mine, his cousin, actually introduced me to the family, and we went to his, just before he passed, we went to his, like, last big birthday bash down in New York City.
Oh,
the family.
I was there.
Were you there? I was in the house, too. I was too.
I think I played it to him.
And it was up in the...
He was one of my teachers.
He was one of your teachers. Charlie Persip, right?
Yeah.
Oh.
I love Charlie.
Yeah. Long live Charlie Persip and his memory. So... as we wrap up our talk, I'm going to play Dues We Have to Pay. I believe you were the drummer.
I think 1977, I believe.
Yes.
Wow.
Mm.
Yeah, Albert Daly, one of the greatest musicians I was ever in contact with, and just a wonderful person. And I'm so grateful that he gave a little rookie like me a chance to be around him. I learned so much from this man, and he was a treasure who left us way too soon. The public doesn't really know about him, but he was like a musician's musician.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then, of course, Charlie Persip.
Oh, well, you know, this is a master, a great master. You know, so many of the people that came before me, they helped to build a foundation for me. I'm just trying to work on the building.
there we go. I'm going to write that one down, too.
I stole that one.
Okay.
I have to tell you, I stole that from Mavis Staples.
Oh, okay. Okay.
When she got the Kennedy Center Award, she got up there and she goes, you know, Pop's built the foundation. We're just working on the building. And I said, that's perfect.
That's perfect. That is perfect.
Yeah, yeah. We all have our fathers and mothers out there, you know. Not just the people that brought us into this world, but the people that nurtured us and encouraged us and inspired us. And there's still a few of them out here and grateful for their presence. So,
absolutely. All right. Well, Adam, thanks again for joining me. You'll be out in Boston on the 20th. That's next Saturday night.
I hope you'll come down.
I will definitely try to be there for sure.
I want to thank you very much. Yeah, and I'm glad you mentioned Therese DiMuzio. Thank you, Therese. Her dad was somebody who was universally loved in the drumming community. As I like to say, a one-in-a-row treasure.
Ah. So mention his name, her dad's name.
Lenny.
Lenny
yeah. DiMuzio. Mm. And he wrote a fantastic book about...
That's right.
Life in the industry called Tales from the Cymbal Bag, which is just fantastic. And he was one of those special people. I think of him all the time. A real treasure.
Beautiful. Well, Adam, it's been real.